Hey guys, do you work in emergency medicine, an absolutely crazy and intense environment where you see things every day that a regular person doesn't see once in their entire life? You feel burned out, unappreciated, like there's no one you can talk to about the things you are struggling with? Well, you are not alone. I have a bunch of real professionals with real stories here with me today that can relate to your struggles. I've struggled with burnout, discouragement, frustration many times and still struggle with it. My name is Aaron. I've been in emergency medicine for 15 years as an EMT, paramedic, and now emergency medicine PA, and I am the host of Practical EMS Podcast. And with that, I will introduce my guests and we will get started. What do you guys think is like the hardest thing about emergency medicine in your various roles? For me, I think being an ER PA, the hard stuff's a lot different than it was when I was on the ambulance. Like the hard stuff on the ambulance was, you know, this 24-hour shift where we had to pronounce three different people on scene. Like we're just running call after call and everybody's dead. Like we're getting there and we're working them.
Yep.
Reaper and Street. We're not transporting anybody.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. Go ahead, buddy.
But you're having that, especially if the fire department's not there. I had to have this conversation with three different families. Your spouse is dead. Your grandma's dead. Nope. And we're leaving them here. Like, we're not transporting them. We can't get them back. I had to have that conversation three different times. And that was just so difficult. And those were probably our only three calls in that 24-hour shift. But, like, that was a different level of difficult than in the ER. In the ER, I feel like we're honestly a little bit sheltered from seeing that stuff in people's houses. Because we get the cardiac arrests that have pulses back or are on that verge that get transported. And we see sick people and all that, but you're not going into somebody's house and having to have that personal conversation every time. And I'm even more sheltered as a PA, I feel like, because I get to work with this team that's going to have a physician on it. If the patient's dying, there's a physician. And I don't have to deal with all that on my own like I did as a paramedic. So I have a ton of respect for you guys that are still in the field and have to have those conversations all the time and have to work those patients all the time. Like you're in their house, their family's all standing around you. You know, I can remember like a call I ran probably 7 or 8 Thanksgivings ago. You know, we're working on Thanksgiving. We run grandpa who has just finished eating Thanksgiving meal, sits down to watch football, goes into cardiac arrest. And, you know, we work this guy for however many rounds of ACLS and he's asystole. And so we pronounce him and like, that just sucks doing that a lot for sure. So I deal with a little bit. It's a different level of difficulty now. Now it's patient volume. It's meeting metrics. It's talking with 1,000 specialists a day. It's a little bit more of a mental game, I think, more than an emotional game, I guess, having to have those conversations with family. Because it's not technically difficult to have the conversation that your family member's dead and we're not going to transport them, but it's emotionally difficult. And now I feel like it's more talking with 12 different specialists in one day and having to tell them exactly what's going on with the patient, what I need from them, and talking with the hospitalist and telling them this patient needs to stay and discussing with the patient why they're safe to go home over and over again. It's just a little bit level of difficulty that's different, but I want to hear from you guys what is most difficult about your job.
Being an EMT basic, because I hear you're just an EMT all the fucking time. I'll be on scene of a call and I'm like, hey guys, I think we have a problem. Why are you saying that and not your medic? Fuck me, I guess. By the way, his face is drooping. Or by the way, this guy's pupils this and this. And his BP's 200 over nothing and the heart rate's 40. Yeah, I think it's a narcotic overdose. No, it's not. This is called Cushing's triad. You're an EMT. I'll go drive the ambulance. Yep, I will. I'm so sorry. Yeah, that's something that gets thrown around all the time. I've heard it years and years and years and years. Thankfully, you know, with the years I've been doing it and knowing the other department and, you know, getting my ACLS and doing all that stuff, like that doesn't happen to me as much. But like a lot of new EMTs will go straight to medic school, so that I've seen it a lot that it's like, oh, I get to do the cool shit. And, you know, it's like almost like a form of respect now. Like I'm the medic. Like whenever I was going through my FI 9 years ago or whatever, literally my FTO was like, okay, you stand here. I'll tell you what to do. Well, what's going on? That doesn't matter. I kind of want to know what's happening here because like we're supposed to be a team. You know, I know something you don't. You know something I don't. And then we can collaborate for patient care. Comes back to like dick sizes and like who is like, you know, oh, this is my scene. Okay, but he's dead. Okay, it's because we didn't do what I said. Okay, well, let's talk about why he's dead. We have H's and T's for a reason. Well, that doesn't matter. It kind of does. Or it's like, you know, someone IOs somebody, but there's like a needle or opiates. Okay, we might not need to IO. We have the technology to spray something up people's noses. No, that's not it. Okay, I'll go sit in the corner. And you get to explain this to the doc and why the opiate overdose has an IO in them. So, yeah, no, I've heard that all throughout my career. Is thankfully, none of my partners have ever treated me like that. Like my first partner, we had a call. And after the call, I told him, I was like, I'm sorry, I'm just an EMT. We're driving in a rig. He slams the brakes and like my face hits the front. And he's like, if you ever fucking say that again, I'm kicking you off my rig. And he told me, he's like, you're not just anything. He's like, I don't care if you have three letters. I don't care if you're an EMR. Right now, you're my partner. And then my newer partner, Trevor, treated me the exact same way. He told me how lucky he was to have an experienced EMT and that he wants us to collaborate together, you know. But I've just heard it all my life. It's like, oh, well, you're the EMT. You go over there and you do what I tell you to. And it's like, okay, but just because I have three letters on my arm does not mean I'm not a provider. Yes, big words is kind of hard to me, but I can understand when someone's dying, going to die. I can read EKGs or I can look at someone and go like, hey, we have a problem. But if I say it, you're wrong. I'll go sit in the corner. I'll go sit on my hands and don't say nothing. And then whenever something bad happens, I'm like, interesting.
Well, I think people with experience, be it a EMT, paramedic, nurse, doc, whatever, people with experience know that your level of training doesn't mean your opinion's not valid. You know what I mean?
Like I appreciate that.
And if you're not listening to people that don't have as much education as you or whatever, I mean, it doesn't take long before that's going to humble you in a bad way. You know, if I ignore the nurse's concern about a patient, it's only a matter of time before that bites me. Like maybe the nurse is a little bit over worried about somebody today, but tomorrow when they bring it to me and I ignore it, that patient's going to end up coding and we're not going to recognize it because I didn't get off my ass and go reevaluate them like they wanted.
Yeah.
So I think it doesn't take a lot of experience and getting humbled numerous times before you realize, regardless of education level, if you have a concern, I should probably go take another look at this patient.
But yeah.
Casey,
I think that's a level of learning at every level. As a paramedic, you know, I know which doctors I want to give report to and which ones I don't particularly, and sometimes don't.
Sorry.
No, it's never been you, Doug, ever. I think one of the hardest things is being told, well, you're just a paramedic. Just kidding.
I'm not just anything. I have edumacation.
That's true. And by the way, I think, and I've said this before as well, we have the best EMTs in the world right here in this city, right here. Hands down, put you up against any other EMTs in the country.
Yeah.
Okay. So just so you know that, that's where I'm at. But
we appreciate it.
Well, and they've saved my ass several times.
Yeah. That's another thing I've heard. EMTs save medics, medics save lives.
Fact. So I think, you know, I've had several new docs that are new to the system that will just blow you off, you know, but that doesn't last long. They learn, you know, because I'll just stop giving report and walk out the room, you know, and then they'll come chase me. Well, aren't you going to give report? No, I'm not. I'm not going to. Sorry. You can figure this out on your own. Bye-bye. Yeah. And I'll go do my thing. But they, you know, they learn. Same with the nurses. You know, it takes a while sometimes, but they do. And because we're a team, we collaborate. Right? That's what we're there for. We're there for the patient, not the egos.
And that's the word I was thinking of. Sorry. What, ego? Yeah. Dick contest came out. Yeah. So, but ego is what I was looking for.
Yeah.
It has more than one syllable.
So anyway, but you're talking about what's hardest, what I think is hardest. And you hit on it. The handling the death in the field is one thing. I'll tell you what really gets me. What really absolutely gets me, and I have to take a break away from and walk away from, is when I get to the hospital and the family comes into that room. It's not in the, it doesn't happen in the home. You know, when I have to say, hey, grandma's dead, you know, we're not transporting her. We've done everything that we can do, everything that's going to, that would have happened in the ER, we've done. And so this is the end point. And now they've died. So that's not as big a problem for me as when I'm in the ER and mom and dad come into the room that their kid is just, you know, was in an ATV accident or whatever, and are dead. And that absolutely horrendous scream, cry, wail. It's different than any other cry you've ever heard. It rips your heart out. Mm-hmm. And then you hear it in the ER. Mm-hmm. And I just think, God, I'm glad I'm not here every day to hear that, because it happens all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the most difficult aspects of this job, is just the heart-wrenching loss that people feel. And I think, I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm pretty sure that you feel that, gosh, did I do everything I could do to avoid that? Mm-hmm. For these people. And it's tough to put yourself in that position. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the hardest aspects of this job at any level, to cope with that. It's really tough. And thank God it doesn't happen.
Right.
Every call. Mm-hmm. Or every patient encounter.
Right.
Because what would we be doing? We wouldn't have jobs.
No. But yeah, for sure.
If I may. Yeah. So Jess, if you don't mind me saying this, she said, because she was listening, obviously, she went a little crazy with her first pediatric death after consoling mom, because she was worried about losing her own daughter. Now, I'm not a father, so I can't. But if you guys want, I could totally see how that, like, because my old partner's dad. But, you know, if we have a ped death, he's like, fuck, my kid's this age.
Can you clarify her? What's her question or her statement?
She's just a statement. I think she was just going off of what Casey was saying. She's like, no, I get it, you know, because that spine tingling scream of a mom who just lost her kid.
Yeah.
I still remember that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I've got some personal experience with that. Actually, mm-hmm. my oldest son had cancer.
Oh,
and he was so well taken care of at the hospital that is represented in this room right now. We couldn't have asked for better treatment other than he died, you know? And, I had a dispatcher that she, after Nick had passed, I was working, and she ended up sending me on several hospice calls. Mm-hmm. And she felt so bad about it. And I told her, I said, send me on every one of them, because I felt that I could help those people because of what I'd just gone through. Mm-hmm. But there is nothing like, you're not supposed to bury your kids. You're just not supposed to. Mm-hmm. And that pain never goes away. It's always, always there. Mm-hmm. And you are always worried about your other kids. You know, I've got two younger kids and an older kid from where Nick was, and grandkids. And it's just always on the forefront of your mind. And you always worry. And once you have that loss, it really is part of your, it's ingrained in you, and, you know, it's tough to get around. And, you know, I see kids all the time that have cancer, and, you know, it just brings me right back to where I was.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I bet.
But, you know, there's triumphs out of it too, you know, that, you know, I'm so happy when I hear somebody that had Ewing sarcoma that, you know, and they survived it, you know, it's great, mm-hmm. you know, but.
Everything you hear today from myself and my guest is opinion only. It does not represent any organizations or companies that any of us are affiliated with. The stories you hear have been modified to protect patient privacy, and any resemblance to real individuals is coincidental only. This is for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be taken as medical advice nor used to diagnose any medical or healthcare conditions.
They are wondering, just because of the way of what this story is, I've been sitting here talking to them. So she was wondering, returning to the job after that kind of loss, how for you?
I worked with some really great people. You never know who your friends are and family is until something happens like that. And I was married to somebody that held me up during that time. And she knows that I'm ever thankful for that. And the people that I worked with held me up, and it made it easier for me to come back to work, because that was, you know, I had a home and I had a home and I had two homes. Mm-hmm. And they both, sorry.
It's okay.
They both supported me, you know, and it wasn't just my ambulance family. It was my hospital family. It was, you know, when Nick died and we had his memorial service, there were doctors, there were nurses, there were radiology techs, lab techs, firefighters, police officers, you know, paramedics, EMTs, and they were all at his memorial service. Hundreds of people. And it was just like, man, I've got a great family. So it made me want to get back to work, you know? So I was lucky enough to have that and to realize that. And it made a huge cushion around me. And so I was able to do that. And it was like a week and I was back to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that's hard to share, but it's in this line of work, like it's not like you can come to work and totally forget and engage yourself in something completely unrelated. Like you're going to see your family member in a patient and running hospice calls. I mean, like you can't make it, you're going to see your son in all of that. Mm-hmm. Like you can't not. And I think after you have kids too, and you see pediatric emergencies and stuff, like it's really hard to ignore the fact like, oh, what if that was my kid? And like every other career, you can go to work and focus on something else, you know, and our line of work makes that really, really difficult. So that's really powerful that you've overcome that. You're stronger. You've taken better care of patients probably as a result. And you've been able to heal from that. Not that it makes it any less painful, but.
And that love you still have is always there. I don't want to sound cheesy.
Yeah. No, it does. Right. And the thing is, you know, you're talking about me being strong, but that wasn't the issue. The issue was that I wasn't strong, really. But everybody around me was.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter who it was. It didn't matter if it was, you know, one of the MMAs that that got our ambulances ready. It didn't matter if it was one of the paramedics. It didn't matter if it was our management staff. It didn't matter if it was our management staff outside of this operation. Mm-hmm. They all genuinely cared and held me up because I needed to be held up because I couldn't do it. Mm. I could not do it on my own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I had such a amazing support staff. And I think this is one of the, you know, emergency medicine is one of those jobs, no matter where you're at, that people rally around you, you know, more than they normally would. In any other given profession. I mean, I can't see that maybe a cardiologist would have this much support, right?
Right.
You build such strong emotional family ties with these people, you know. This last year, so Tracy and I were both off on Christmas this year. So we got to spend Christmas together with kids, with family, and with friends. And, you know, I'm always so thankful. And I always say that, you know, I don't call them my friends. I call them my family of friends because they are. And it's just because they, you know, we're there to hold each other, good times and bad times. And, you know, thankfully we have those people.
Yeah.
So
thanks for sharing that, Casey. I'm going to end this segment.
Thanks.
Give us a second to reset. Guys, I hope that you are getting some value out of the show. If it's resonating with you, encouraging you, making you feel not so alone, I hope that you'll subscribe to the show, give a 5-star rating and review. It will help a ton.
If you still have a second, sorry, someone else was asking. Parents when they harm their kids.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very real thing that, I mean, like, people know about it, but it, to my opinion, really doesn't get talked about. You know, like punching, not feeding them, sexual assault with kids. You know, I take sexual assault personally just because of the whole prostitution stuff. But my biggest thing is whenever I see someone with autism, and I had a kid who was autistic and he had third degree burns on his butt and his hands because the family put him up to a heater. And like, that's a very horrible reality that people do that to kids. Their parents do that. Their siblings do that. You know, shaken baby syndrome is a real thing, you know? So with those kinds of calls, I've mainly been more wanting to hear, listen to everything that's going on so that I can document it, hoping in the long run that that kid will be okay. That, like, me and my old partner, Trevor, like, we had a call with PD and the kid had bruises all over him. You know, he had bruises on his neck. And I was trying to figure out, I mean, without getting into the call for obvious reasons, trying to figure out how to get this kid to a hospital because there was a lot of things going on that we couldn't. So it turs out the kid had a right bundle branch block and he was having like QT shit. So we were like, I think this kid got poisoned. Mm-hmm. So we were able to go like, hey, there's some medical things going on here. This kid needs checked out. So then PD was like, cool, get him out of here. And then took him up to the hospital. The hospital was amazing to the kid. Like, they brought him like this big buffet. The kid just started bawling his eyes out. Oh, man. You know, and like the situation was horrible, but it seems like this kid is going to be okay. Now, he's probably going to need therapy, you know, with what happened to him, you know, but in the short running, to me, with those calls, I try to my best to do everything I can for the long run that they're going to be okay, or they can see some kind of light at the end of a dark tunnel right now. So that's kind of the best answer I can give you.
I'll tell you one of the bad things, the hardest things is.
Yeah.
Picture this call. I could take you right. This has been 35, 40 years ago, and I can take you to this right to where it was. Today.
Yeah.
And it was in a little duplex. It was not far from one of our fire stations. It was a little 9-year-old girl, cardiac arrest. She didn't look like she had a mark on her.
Mm-hmm.
We picked her up, took her to the hospital. They did autopsy on her and she was completely torn up.
Ugh.
Completely torn up. Sexual assault. She had lacerated spleen, mm-hmm. lacerated mm-hmm. liver, but she didn't look like she'd been beaten. She didn't have any bruises on her, nothing. Yeah, sure. And we found out about it. And a couple of shifts later, we got a call to that same address. Well, boyfriend of mom, who had done this, who was the perpetrator of this obscene whatever. But we got called for him because the police had gone to arrest him and they set the dog loose.
Yeah.
Diago. And it found him in a hiding under a pile of clothes and
bit
his ass,
mm-hmm.
took a chunk out of it. And so, you know, back then, our job was a lot different. You know, we didn't have as many constraints on us, really. And this guy was lucky he didn't get beaten into ICU.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to restrain yourself when you have to deal with the perpetrator. It's so hard.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you see one of these patients, first thing you want to do is beat somebody's ass.
Yeah.
And they're innocent little. And they may not be little, you know, they may be older or whatever, but they're innocent. And you just want to, you know, fix it. And although that's not going to fix it, but it'll make you feel better. But, you know, it's really difficult to hold on to that.
And, no, that's and literally
restrain yourself from, you know, it's hard.
And, yeah.
You know, but we do it.
And that's literally how I feel when people say men can't be sexually assaulted. I literally just want to hit someone in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys, I'm going to jump in here. I want to thank everybody on the live stream. If you guys got any value out of this today, and don't worry, guys, we're going to keep talking. But if you got any value out of this today, if it resonated with you, if it encouraged you, the only thing I ask is you subscribe to the show on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. Give a 5-star review. That will help a ton. I don't make any money from this podcast and actually pay a fair amount of money to do it. If you can support the show, that'll be very helpful. If you go to practicalems.com, you can join the email list so you know when all the episodes are coming out. There's an EKG course on there as well if you want to financially support the show. And we'll jump back into the conversation with these folks next time. Thanks, guys.